time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
Tom Brady is my Lord and Savior.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Super Bowl, but he was booed when he made his return to Seattle last night. Russell Wilson showing up in a suit with a bow tie. He looked corny. He also had sunglasses on. And today, my Russell Wilson hating co-host Paul Gallant walked in a very similar outfit. Let me describe it for you if you're driving in your car. My co-host is currently wearing a three-piece, what is that, a tux?
That is a tux.
With a black and white bow tie, and then a Seattle Seahawks pocket square, and then he has his sunglasses on.
Don't forget the lapel.
Yeah, you have the lapel, too. Just as the fans booed Russell Wilson, I, too, booed you when you walked in.
I don't care, Vanessa. Look, it's a coincidence that I'm just wearing a tuxedo.
Oh, total coincidence.
On this Tuesday. That was glorious last night.
I want your first, and we will run through the game. But I want your emotional reaction, not logical, but just seeing him return to Seattle as somebody that covered him for 2 years, as somebody that has been honest about the fact that you never really liked him. You always thought he was corny. You always thought he was a politician. Emotional reaction first.
I'm very proud of Seattle for handling it the right way. The guy forced his way out of town. At some point down the road, he will be welcomed back to Seattle to retire his jersey or to be inducted into the Seahawks Hall of Fame or something like that. And he will get his flowers. He forced his way out of town this offseason. That was the appropriate reaction. And for a city that really does give a damn about football to an extremely passionate degree, they chose to be on their team's side and make his life a living hell last night. And I thought they did a damn good job of maybe not doing it for us, but doing it for a Broncos team that was penalized, I think, 10 times?
It was over 10 times.
Yeah.
I remember because...
Maybe 12.
I'm glad that you brought that up because when you look at all of the storylines of the game, especially how it ended, you forget that they played such sloppy football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because the focus is on how it ended. And how it ended, ladies and gents, is that the $250,000 quarterback who they paid and the brand new coach, head coach Nathaniel Hackett, chose to try for a field goal. No confidence in Russell Wilson. What did that say to you?
You don't know what you got till it's gone. Pete Carroll was someone that frustrated Russell Wilson constantly by not going for it on fourth down. But think about yesterday with Nathaniel Hackett, a first-time head coach for Russell Wilson. Nathaniel Hackett, at the end of a game, chooses to allow 30 seconds of clock to run off while he has 30 seconds instead of trying to convert a fourth and six. It was a 64-yard field goal. I get that Brandon McManus has that kind of leg. But man, you really got to hit that one perfect. And that end zone in particular in Seattle history has never done so well for the opposition. There's been a lot of crazy things that have happened on that side of the field. There's like a weird wind tunnel going on because of the way that the end zone stands are set up.
Because somebody tweeted that, but I didn't know the details.
Right.
That was like a suspicious spot. Regardless of how you feel about Russell Wilson, this was the coming out party for Nathaniel Hackett as a head coach.
It was bad.
And it did not look good. What did we hear over and over and over again? Let Russ cook. Russ is going to have weapons in Denver. It's going to be a fresh start, but it didn't work out. Here's Nathaniel Hackett, by the way, on that decision to kick, as you said, kind of that unrealistic field goal.
Yeah, fourth and six. For me, during that time, we had been just moving it slightly. They weren't moving it with big chunks. I think we had just given up a sack right before that. So wanted to be sure that we took a chance when we had a chance. And I felt confident in him.
Which is crazy.
Don't ever say chunks when you're in a press conference.
That's
what
fair.
Is that? Ew.
They're getting chunks of yardage.
No, it makes me think of like cottage cheese.
We're not talking about chunks of cottage cheese or blowing chunks. We're talking about chunks of yardage. He's wrong. The Seahawks were allowing the Broncos to do whatever they wanted at the end of that game. I mean, take a look at Russell Wilson's numbers at the end. And they were running the football on Seattle. They were throwing the ball on Seattle. The big problem was they were 0-for-4 in the red zone. So Hackett's 100% wrong there. That was terrible clock management. They had all three timeouts that they let the clock run down the way that they did. and then called a timeout, giving them absolutely no fallback option should they miss the field goal, was a tremendous mistake. And then go back to a couple of those goal-to-go situations that the Broncos had. They kept choosing to run the football as opposed to throwing the ball. And I found it kind of funny that Russell Wilson is now in a purgatory with Nathaniel Hackett, where whenever they're in the red zone, instead of being allowed to throw it on the one-yard line where he threw that interception to end Super Bowl 49, the Broncos chose to run. They fumbled twice. They were stuffed once. It was pretty hilarious
the
for this guy.
The irony of the game. The irony of really the game from start to finish, I thought, was hilarious. I've said this before about the way, like, Baker Mayfield's teammates did not stand up for him. I always think you can tell if a person was really liked by when they're on their way out or something like that. Nobody stood up for Kyler Murray. Nobody in the locker room stood up for Baker Mayfield with the Browns for the most part. And yesterday we saw a visceral reaction from a lot of former and current Seahawks. Doug Baldwin Jr. tweeting out, it's kind of hard to describe, but it's a gif of a cheerleader looking really sassy, saying, you know, basically, how do you like me now? And you had Shelby Harris, who was part of that trade to Denver with Russell, or excuse me, from Denver with Russell Wilson. You had him talking to, it was James Palmer, correct?
Somebody James Palmer of the NFL Network.
And you're friends with James. James did a great interview with a very emotional and honest Shelby Harris.
Shelby, you were part of this trade. And I know all the talk in this, heading into this game was about Russell Wilson and about him coming back. But you heard the Geno Smith chants. You heard what was going on in this building. What kind of statement is this for this team?
It's a 1-0 statement. You know what I mean? We come out here, everybody doubted us. Everyone made this about Russ. You feel me? We made this about the Seattle Seahawks. Come out here, you know, play good ball for four quarters, come out with the W. Nobody expected us to win except us. It's always going to be us.
Last one I have for you. I was standing on the sideline watching you go absolutely insane. How much did this mean to you personally?
All I have to say is, let's ride.
Let's ride.
That was awesome.
Broncos country. Let's ride.
Are you surprised that Doug Baldwin and Richard Sherman was tweeting
definitely
cocky things?
Him.
I mean, all of them. What was your thought on that?
Russell Wilson never made himself a part of that team. And while the defensive players for the Legion of Boom Seahawks, I think, are a little bit over the top with their disdain for Russ getting special treatment after he emerged as a top quarterback in the league, I thought that was always petty. But after the last 2 years, I've totally changed my mind on that because of the ways that he was trying to force his way out of town. And once again, there's a lot of disparaging of coaches that have been in the NFL for a long period of time. You will see
ageism.
It, and you'll see it online, especially, Vanessa, from you'll see this new analytical football community that doesn't really understand how difficult it is to move up and down his sidelines. Pete Carroll's been doing this forever. And while I wouldn't say he's the best coach of all time, and he certainly has his fair share of issues, Pete Carroll is a better coach than Nathaniel Hackett. That Russ thought that he could have a partnership with some rookie head coach and that things would be better, he's got another thing coming. And look, it's one game. It's obviously still overreaction to week one. Hackett could get better on the job. But if you're Russ, how do you feel good about Nathaniel Hackett after a game like this where you could have been aggressive at the end and given the ball to Russ? You didn't. You could have been aggressive on the goal line and allowed Russ to cook, if you will. You didn't.
Let Russ cook. How many times did we hear that?
We did.
Pete Carroll, by the way, did not come out and say, oh, how dare they boo the man that helped us win a Super Bowl. Oh, how dare they blah, blah, blah. Here is Pete Carroll on the crowd's reaction to Russ.
Yeah, they really, I didn't know, and I was wondering, well, you know, how they would respond, figuring that they probably would respond in a way that trying to make it as hard as possible on the other guy because they want to win. And so that's what competing is, and our fans competed in spectacular fashion tonight. This was amazing, an amazing place to be tonight, and right from the get-go.
He did a good job of cleaning up. Hell yes, I'm glad they booed.
Well, you know, we're always competing out there, and I didn't tell him to boo Russell Wilson. You know, that's not my style, but, you know, man, that's the energy that was out there with the 12s. So, you know, always competing out there, Vanessa, always compete.
I once had an ex. We broke up, and I was not at a good point in my life. He was at a good point in his life. And when we broke up, even though I am the one that initiated the breakup, I thought, okay, things are going really well for him. And he was really kind of cocky, didn't like. About a year later, I see him for the first time, and I am doing much better than him. I have upgraded my life. I had a great new job. I was really enjoying myself.
Hell yeah.
And he was down in the dumps. That is what happened. Russell Wilson thought that he was going to be on the better end of the breakup. Russell Wilson thought, I'm going to go to Seattle. They're going to welcome me home, and I'm going to pat them on the head, and I'm going to say, we had our time together, buddy. It was time for me to move on to bigger and better things. And that's not what happened at all. The Seahawks came back from a weekend in Nantucket, and they had lost 30 pounds, and they had new, you know, Nordstrom clothes on.
Bolt-ons?
And they looked good. And
gotcha.
They looked good.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, it was truly like seeing that you did better than your ex that treated you poorly towards the end of a breakup.
And you mentioned there's a couple of things that you had seen leading up to this game, too.
Can I give you my list?
Go ahead.
My top three. The most insufferable things he did all week. Number three, pay tribute to the queen. I'm pretty sure he just did that because he likes the term queen, king, win.
Yes,
let's
queen.
Ride. Number two, wear the outfit last night, which if you're just tuning in, Paul is wearing a very similar outfit.
A better outfit. No.
I mean, I do like the color black better than...
He did not have suspenders. He did not have a pocket square. He did not have a lapel. He is a poor.
The number one most insufferable thing he did. This got caught in the mix last night because there were so many. But before the game, Russell Wilson does this thing where he either prays, or our producer Sean Mabe said he visualizes
he's just
the field.
Spinning around in a circle.
He's spinning around with his eyes closed, and I think he's speaking in tongues. But he doesn't do this in a quiet room or a quiet corner of the field where he can spend some time with God or in his thoughts. He does it so everybody can see. That, ladies and gentlemen, was the most insufferable thing for me. Losing wasn't even in the top three.
He's basically doing the Terrell Owens on the Dallas Cowboys star, but he's doing it pregame. And, like, again, acting like it's, you know, either visualizing or him getting close with God. But he has to be at the 50-yard line to do it.
Yep.
With his arms out.
Look, there's a lot of players that have done that in the past. I think
they don't make it as weird.
Juju Smith-Schuster was doing that. I think what Juju Smith-Schuster was doing...
No, he was literally doing TikTok dances.
Right. No, yes. These are categories of their own. But Russ, just the cheesiness, the corniness, I used to stick up for him. Because I thought, why does it matter if he makes dad jokes or if he... It's now so fake that it's almost insufferable.
Did you see Russ after the game doing the patented listing all of the people that have been good to him?
The Bill O'Brien method.
He listed legitimately every single player on the Seahawks. He was like, yeah, I still text him a couple of times a day. DK Metcalf. This guy named Penny, who I don't even know about. And it's not Rashad Penny. There's another Penny on the Seahawks. Penny Hart. Right. Jamal Adams. Oh, I was praying for Jamal Adams after he suffered that injury. It was vintage Russ. And look, it's game one. I think that Denver, over the course of the season, will be a better team than the Seahawks. Like, are you really expecting Geno Smith to go 17 of 18?
We didn't even touch on him, by the way.
Start a game.
Dana Holgerson product.
Hell yeah.
Geno Smith from West Virginia.
Take me home, country roads, to the place I belong. That's never going to happen again. His performance in the first half remind me of the game that Case Keenum had in the first half of a 2013 game between the Texans and the Colts.
I remember.
The Gary Kubiak, oh my God, did he die game, where in the first half, Case Keenum was 10 of 17 for 208 yards and 3 touchdowns. What Smith did in the first half last night was that dominant and that unexpected. That's not going to happen again. I think the Seahawks rode off of the emotions of the crowd that was there, and credit to them. This was their Super Bowl. It's all probably downhill from there. I think that everyone in that city will gladly take it.
Peter Schrager said something interesting on Good Morning Football, where he had said something to Pete Carroll about who their backup quarterback would be. And he said, well, you're forgetting about Geno Smith. So apparently they've been watching Geno for a while. By the way, the Broncos' next four games, they play the Houston Texans on Sunday,
yikes,
followed by the 49ers, the Raiders, and the Colts. It's not exactly a murderer's row, but if they can't get it together like they did last night, look for maybe the 49ers and the Colts and then the Raiders to give them hell. As for the Texans, we shall see.
We can only hope.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, did this game make you feel better about the result of the Texans-Colts game on Sunday? That's coming up.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, a weird ending to the Colts-Texans game on Sunday. Obviously, it ended in a tie at 20. It was the first tie in Texans history and the first one for the Colts in 40 years, so it was technically historic, but a very strange game indeed. A lot of people questioned Lovie Smith for not having the courage, or for lack of a better term, to go for it, to trust that the Colts maybe once again would fail with the field goal, or that his defense could stuff Matt Ryan, etc. They were saying it wasn't very bold. After last night's decisions by Nathaniel Hackett specifically, do you feel any better about the Texans' tie on Sunday? The bow tie is now off, by the way.
We might put it back on later. It's hard to tie a bow tie, but for those who don't know, I wore a tuxedo with a bow tie in because Russell Wilson came into the Seahawks-Broncos game last night wearing this mint green tuxedo that looked like something out of Dumb and Dumber. I feel better about this. It's not necessarily a guarantee that if you have an offensive-minded head coach that you will be more aggressive in the right situations, or that you will put the ball in the hands of your best player in a winning situation. And I will go back to the two fumbles that the Broncos had on the goal line where they handed the football off. I will go back to them deciding to kick a 64-yard field goal instead of, with three timeouts left and 51 seconds left on the clock, trying to go for it, pushing it a little bit further down the field, and seeing if a Seahawks offense, which was not moving the football, could get a first down before the end of it. They took it out of Russell Wilson's hands. It's an offensive-minded head coach. You would think that someone like Lovie Smith, a defensive-minded head coach, would be equally conservative there. That's a nice little, I guess, silver lining that you can pull out of watching another new head coach.
I think what makes me feel better is that the Texans know they're rebuilding. There's not a single guy. Now, they may say, well, we think we can go to the chip. That's fine. If you injected them with truth serum, every member of that roster, even the rookies, are smart enough to know it's a rebuild. The Broncos do not think it's a rebuild.
No.
It is not a rebuild.
No.
They're expecting to win a lot of games. They're expecting to maybe win the AFC West, which is a really tough division. At least we think it's going to be. So what makes me feel better is I think there is a self-awareness and a harmony among the Texans players that doesn't seem to be in Denver, also with being behind the head coach. So I think that that's what gives me maybe a little bit of reprieve. Also, let's face it, guys, the Texans and the Colts tied for first in the AFC South. How do you like them apples?
That is pretty
Titans
funny.
Titans and Jags both lost.
It's very weird to see the divisions after week one, too, because you're also seeing Seattle's the only first place team in the NFC West. It's the one team that everyone wrote off going
there
into
you go.
The year.
That's very true.
So this might not last. And again, I think at the end of the year, we're probably going to be looking back at this tie, thinking to ourselves, this should have been a win. Say the Texans actually are competing for anything at the end of the season. I don't expect that, by the way. This would be one of the games,
anything
though, that you'd look
happen.
Back at.
We didn't think the Seahawks would win last night either. Lovie Smith held a press conference yesterday afternoon. I give a shout out to Brian Barefield, a.k.a. Big Sarge Media LLC, as he's known on Twitter. He had a little exchange with Lovie Smith, and here it is.
Can't you tell me what happened? I mean, I can't remember back then. I'm kind of on to Denver now. The specifics, a specific play you want to talk about?
Well, you had sacks and you had penalties.
Well, that's what happened. Sacks and penalties happened during that time.
Sarge, this was incredible.
Sergeant asked him about, like, leading up to it, why is it that you made the decision that you made? And I think that Sarge was trying to give Lovie a chance to explain, hey, like, this is why I chose to punt the ball away in that spot. And I think the way that he worded it allowed for Lovie to kind of pounce and be a little snarky there. What was interesting along the way, though, did you hear him say that we're on to Denver?
On to Cincinnati, baby.
I got a question.
Okay.
Do you think that after a tie, that this locker room, that is an older locker room, has a lot of veterans,
yeah,
is capable of putting a game where I don't think anyone was really 100% sold on going for the tie in the rearview mirror?
I say yes only because, I think they're smart enough to know they're rebuilding and they were not expecting a win to begin with. The Colts are a completely different story. I don't think the Colts are cool with the tie.
They're definitely not.
But that would just be my opinion, is that I think the majority of them, since they weren't expecting to win.
I don't know, though, because the beginning of the season, everyone has an unrealistic
expectation of themselves. I think they know they're rebuilding.
You're telling me
Brandon Cooks and Rex Burkhead are like, yeah, we're going to beat the Indianapolis Colts.
I feel like they feel optimistic. I mean, you saw Titus Howard say yesterday, we're building something special on Twitter. I don't believe him necessarily.
They are building. Tis not built.
I think what you're talking about is what maybe the top of the organization feels. I don't think Cal McNair has a lot of expectations for this season. I don't think Nick Caserio has a lot of expectations for this season.
I think Cal McNair thinks they can win a Super Bowl.
Oh, no. Well, I hope that you're wrong on that front. But I think that in that locker room, week one, every team feels different. I mean, you saw on Hard Knocks with the Detroit Lions. No one thinks the Lions are going to be good, but they do. Look, I get what you are saying in that there are certain teams that don't believe. I think week one, everyone kids themselves. And after a performance like that where they were up 20-3 going into the fourth quarter.
Well, that's a different story. But the fact that in game they think that they're going to win is different than the broad over. Because I agree with you on that. It's different than the broad overview. They did not think they were going to beat the Indianapolis Colts.
I think
the majority of them, there is no way if they thought they were going to beat the Indianapolis Colts. Now, during the game, it's a different story.
It's the NFL, though. I mean, this is the one league where anything can happen on any given Sunday. That's why it's so difficult to make picks, BOSR.com/ESPN. Why it's so hard also to go undefeated in this league. Like, really, any team can win. I disagree. I think that team felt they could win, and I wonder if they're going to be able to put this in the rearview mirror. I thought it was interesting that Lovie Smith said, hey, we're on to Denver.
On to Denver, and rearview mirror.
And wanted to focus on the positives, but they want to move forward. And I just wonder, Lovie Smith's a veteran head coach. I'm sure he knows how to move these guys forward. I want to know if the rest of this locker room knows how to move forward.
Lovie has seen a lot. I mean, it's his third tenure as a head coach. So in his mind, and like he said, in his mind, he agrees with the decision he made. I'm glad you're staying positive. This is kind of a weird twist where I'm the more negative one. Lovie Smith was also staying positive in yesterday's press conference.
How about a positive from yesterday? How about that O.J. Howard guy? Just been here a couple weeks, two big catches, and seriously, just gave us something that we haven't, you know, a little bit more to add with Pharaoh, and of course you mentioned Brevin. But just look at what the tight end position was able to do yesterday. That's something to build upon, too.
Lovie Smith saying, give us some love.
I was going to ask him about some of the positive things, too. Everyone wanted to pounce on him, and there's nothing like being at a press conference when all of a sudden a question's been answered, and legitimately everyone tries to ask a question next, like it's the White House press room. But that happened a couple of times yesterday.
People were talking over each other, you mean?
Oh, yeah, it was
funny.
So
they didn't have the mic situation.
No,
going
they didn't.
On.
No, I sat back and I enjoyed the chaos. I did get two questions in. We'll talk about one of his answers to the other one later. But he was getting asked a lot about punting and not going for the win. Understandably so. He also was asked about Dameon Pierce not being used a lot. And he at the very least admitted that it was maybe a mistake to not use Pierce as much as they did. But I think he felt on the ropes a little bit and wanted to say, like, look, we did do some good things. And you know what? They did. I mean,
I almost get it, though, because he was asked about that so much in postgame. And obviously you're going to have the follow-up. I do understand him saying there were other elements to this game. Hell, even if it is critiquing his use or lack thereof of Dameon Pierce, I do understand him saying, okay, like, you guys, y'all have written your columns. Like, let's focus on the matchup with Denver to a certain extent. But it's still Monday.
It's Monday.
I mean, it's Monday. We're not on to...
I mean, Denver hadn't even played
today.
Yet.
It was Monday yesterday when this happened.
Denver hadn't even played yet. So
Right. Now
we'll see. Obviously, I'm not feeling great going into this week. I think Russ is going to be pissed off. We'll see if that actually helps. I will say in last night's game, there were a couple of moments where I was like, oh, these are some of the same bad habits that Russ had in Seattle, where he's throwing the ball downfield and he's not seeing things that are right in front of him. And his accuracy wasn't what it has been in the past. But anyway, you know, I'm not feeling great about this game. No one should feel great about this game. Going on the road to Denver, it's tough to play in Denver. You got the altitude. And this is a team that just played in a overtime game that ended in a tie. You went the full 10 minutes in overtime. At the very least, they're on a short week, Denver, and they're coming back from Seattle. But I'm very curious as to if Lovie can turn the page for everybody else in this locker room.
We have some injuries from week one. We have some upsets from week one. We're going to go through all of it around the NFL in our 10-minute drill. That's coming up next.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Vanessa and Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
Hell yeah, we're ready for some football. We are on to week two, baby. The Texans are going to go to Denver and play the Broncos, and Russell Wilson, let's ride. But one of the biggest stories involved another quarterback, Dak Prescott, who injured his hand slash thumb. Jerry Jones, the only owner in all of professional sports who insists and seems to like breaking injury news to reporters before the head coach can, met with the media and said that it looked serious, 6 to 8 weeks, etc. Adam Schefter this morning says not so fast. Jerry Jones on 105.3 The Fan this morning said that the Cowboys will not put Dak on the injured reserve and that he thinks Dak could return within the next four games. So there were a lot of murmurs. Are they going to go get Jimmy G? I saw Cam Newton's name floated around because of this league. Do you think they go get another quarterback now or they stick with Cooper Rush?
I mean, maybe we should turn to an NFL expert. Like,
well, we'll get there in a second, but okay. I'm asking you guys.
They should make the trade right now. Like, they should trade something. If Mike McCarthy wants to keep his job, do that right now. Do the Cowboys want Mike McCarthy to keep his job?
No.
I wonder after this first performance, because this is a team that said that they would not be as dumb as they were last year. And week one, I mean, we're talking all of the penalty yardage, which has been the going theme for the Cowboys for 25 years.
They looked rough with Dak Prescott. I mean, I don't know what this team's going to be able to do.
That's what I was going to say, is that it's not like this is some awesome team that needs
right.
a quarterback now that Dak is hurt to salvage their chance of making a deep playoff run. Like, that team for the first three quarters did not look alive on offense. They have no one at receiver other than CeeDee Lamb.
And he caught 2 of 11. I mean, it was
exactly
ridiculous.
Because I think he's a number two guy. He's not a number one. At least yet in his career, being a number one guy is too much for CeeDee Lamb.
He's in that 88 club, though.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
Skip Bayless, who is, you know, known to be very even-keeled and very measured, had a take about Cooper Rush compared to Dak Prescott. Here's Skip.
Can make a case that Cooper Rush is almost as good as Dak, and sometimes I think he can be a little more consistent than Dak.
Well, you
when has Dak ever shown you any routine consistency?
You need to put that on the briefcase and walk up out of here.
I agree. Cooper Rush has been consistently not who you want ever on a football field. If you're a Cowboy fan right now, you're feeling like the season is over. It's very weird to see how the Cowboys are managing this too publicly as far as setting expectations. You would think that they would say, we're going to take our time getting him back. Did you not watch last year where Russell Wilson had a similar hand injury, was rehabbing for 20 hours a day, supposedly, came back and was not good for a couple of weeks, which is an impossible number.
That's not real.
Is he sleeping?
That is a lie.
Well, your body is repairing itself while you sleep.
Yeah, that's probably the rationalization he used for lying. Have we checked on Jake Asman of the Wheelhouse lately? A wellness check after that Jets game? We should. And we should also check on Robert Saleh, because he said they're going to be really good, and they're making a list of all y'all doubting them.
When those little errors that the offense was having in the first half stop happening, it's going to be explosive. And then it carries on to the second half. You're just going to feel it. And in a way, it does just click, where you're just stacking up day after day after day. And it's really, really cool when it does happen, because it just absolutely pops off the tape. And I know it's going to happen. We're all taking receipts on all the people who continually mock and say that we ain't going to do anything. I'm taking receipts. And I'm going to be more than happy to share them with all of y'all when it's all said and done.
Your quarterback is Joe Flacco. Shut up. Ooh, look at me. I'm Robert Saleh. I'm really handsome. Like, that's all you have going for you. That's all you have going for you. You are the head coach of an organization that has been a joke for the majority of its existence. Save 2010, 1998. 1969, 8. I don't even remember the year that they won Super Bowl III.
Jets.
This is a team that has always had issues, and it starts with ownership. And you can act as if, okay, we're going to turn this around. People are wondering whether or not Zach Wilson is good, and this was regardless of the injury he suffered in the preseason. I mean, they said he's going to be back week 3, week 4, and they're not even giving any room for him to potentially be back out there.
And we don't have an update on that, which tells me something.
I don't think it's just injury as far as them holding him back until a couple of weeks from now.
All right. I think that was a Hail Mary to try and motivate his team. I don't think that he actually thinks that they're going to be good. I think that is his final, let's try to get these guys riled up. Yeah, we're keeping receipts. Baker Mayfield treated week 1 like the Super Bowl. He literally had shirts made supporting himself, and then they were not able to beat the Browns. Baker Mayfield now with the Panthers, of course. Here's Baker Mayfield on, it was just everybody else making it out to be a big deal.
Everybody made this out to be the Super Bowl, but despite what everybody's going to make this, there's 16 more games. The Super Bowl is not till February, and this is the beginning of September. So, like I said, a lot of anticipation, but we're going to flush this, we're going to learn it, and we're going to be better from it.
He made it out to be the Super Bowl.
It was the Super Bowl. You can't act like it wasn't. Did you see Jimmy Haslam on the other sideline after the Browns won?
Oh,
my God. He was probably as excited as he was whenever he was able to get out from, serving any serious jail time with that Pilot J scandal back in the day. This was Baker's Super Bowl, a chance to prove them wrong. He did lean into it to an extent. I mean, yeah, for the most part in his press conference, he was talking about his good memories. But then he has that random shot that he took at Nick Chubb that we played on the air last week. He made this about him, too. And while he deserves credit for how awesome he was in the fourth quarter where he had a perfect passer rating, leading up to it, he was getting sacked. He had a couple of bad interceptions. And you can't just walk away from it and act like this is just one game. This is a game that people are going to remember for years. It was your chance at revenge, and it's why people don't take you seriously as a franchise quarterback.
If you do all that talking, you got to back it up.
100.
Mike Martz did some talking. 100. That's bussing for real.
Mm-hmm.
He was the offensive coordinator, of course, with the Rams when they won the Super Bowl, longtime head coach, and he is not feeling the one play Trey, a.k.a. the Trey Lance show.
I don't know if I've ever seen such a bad performance by a quarterback in his opening performance of the season. Like, he was just completely awful. He really deflated the football team with his performance. They just, you know, when you get a quarterback, they can't do anything at all. And defensively, you shut him out basically for a half. You kind of lose hope. You know, right now they're
harsh.
A team without hope.
Don't you love how they have the jaunty music in the background too? Like, it's upbeat music as he's saying, like, yeah, that guy's the worst thing I've ever seen. He's like a meteor hitting the earth. He's what killed the dinosaurs.
I mean, I think also just like Trey Lance seems so nice that I love when people crap on Baker Mayfield and those other. But like Trey Lance, I'm like, oh, you're not ever probably going to be what people thought that you were going to be. It makes me sad. But Mike had no trouble throwing it out there. Interesting exchange between Leonard Fournette and Micah Parsons.
Yes. So
you paid more attention to this than I did.
There was a play in the Cowboys-Bucks game where Leonard Fournette put a shoulder into a pass-rushing Micah Parsons who was engaged with another blocker and put him on his ass. Pro Football Focus retweeted that video. So Micah Parsons responds to that video saying, now go watch the tape and see what happened when it was me going up with Leonard Fournette one-on-one. You hit someone not looking. You straight meow. In other words,
did you just meow?
Well,
in place of a cuss word.
Well, what? Yeah, what
really completes
what
the meows, bow tie look.
Stop hyping this weak ass bleep. It's football. I like how he censored ass, but he didn't censor the poop word. He laugh emojis, and then Leonard Fournette responds with the old reliable crying Jordan meme. So this league, Leonard Fournette against Micah Parsons. Von Miller weighed in and said maybe we should be doing something about a offensive player's ability to come in to an engaged player and knock him on his ass. I don't know about that one. I think Parsons versus Fournette in a one-on-one, Parsons would win. But that was a moment where Fournette did his job and Parsons wasn't able to get by. I don't know why Parsons so sensitive about it. Like he was engaged there.
What the mistake that guys make and that players make in general is responding out of emotion. And they used to be able to only do that in press conferences. From a very broad perspective, they now have their phones in their hands, which is why you see Lamar Jackson getting into it with a player that played for the Ravens 12 years ago, Tony Pollard. It happens. But, yeah, definitely an interesting exchange there. We're going to have a lot more NFL stories throughout the show because we weren't able to get to all of them. But coming up, Aggies fans, you may not want to tune into this. We got to talk about this damn midnight yell. It is maybe the lamest tradition I have ever heard of in college sports. Plus, what does James Click's future look like with the Houston Astros? That's coming up next on Vanessa and Gallant.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, Cougs fans, stay tuned. In a couple of minutes, we're going to give away some tickets. So you are going to want to continue to listening to the station and 713-780-3776. But first, let's talk about the Aggies.
So it was bad enough that they lost on Saturday, that Haynes King has looked the way that he's looked through 2 weeks, that Jimbo Fisher hasn't had the stones to pull the plug on him despite the offensive struggles, the worst field goal attempt to tie a game with 4 minutes left that I think I've seen in football in quite some time, which is saying something given what we saw this past week in all of football with all of the missed kicks, whether it was Texas or it was Rodrigo Blankenship. Yes, it
was
bad.
Can I interest you in something worse?
Please do.
That I actually didn't know about.
Hit me.
I'm going to tell you one more time. Until Sean Mapes, our producer, told us about it. It is called the Aggie Midnight Yell.
Oh, you've never heard of this?
I had never heard of it. And the only thing I know is that when I first saw this video, I noticed a lot of overalls and a lot of what these guys consider smack talking. Let's go ahead and play the Aggie Midnight Yell. Now, this is before their game, of course, against Appalachian State, which they ended up losing. And in hindsight, bad decisions were made.
I had to Google this team to make sure that they're even real.
Yeah.
I was really confused because Appalachia is definitely not a state.
Pause. Thank you, Sean.
He is right. It's not a state.
They're also a school that has had enough upsets and enough moments to where people know that it's a real school. So he didn't start out terribly. He just started out a little bit lame. Please continue.
But sure enough, I found them, and they're located deep, and I mean deep, in the backwoods. Just like you would think any hillbilly college that names themselves the Mountaineers.
Pause.
I think Mountaineers is a better nickname than the Aggies.
It's a great nickname.
That's just me. I mean, I would be scared of a mountain man. If Jeremiah Johnson, played by Robert Redford back in the day, came up to me, I wouldn't know what to expect. He's a man who's been living in the woods
by
himself.
You know how many people thought that was Zach Galifianakis?
What?
Yeah. If you ever Google Robert Redford, Zach Galifianakis, there's like 80% of people our age thought that that gif was Zach Galifianakis because it looks a lot like him.
But it
was actually Robert Redford, hottie, old hottie, dressed up. Okay, here's my rule of life for Aggie fans.
Life, okay.
You cannot call somebody a hillbilly if you are in overalls and if you attend Texas A&M.
The word agriculture is in the name
Correct.
Of the school.
Well, they're farmers. It's different. It's different than being a hillbilly. Because see, well,
I love that Paul's defending this.
Yeah,
by this the way.
Yeah, me from Terre Haute, Indiana, who my family owns like 300 acres of a farm. It's not that you're right that it's not the same, but it's not like they are the classiest of humans at this moment. They are men in overalls on a Saturday.
I will just say the joke about hillbillies is that they have land because it's hilly that they can't actually farm on.
And their name is William, and so it's hillbilly? No, what's with the history of hillbilly?
I'm not sure. I heard this recently, but
Mr.
it's
Boston
about...
Boston hillbilly.
It's about
here.
Not having land that's farmable. So, I mean, you would think that Texas A&M has more farmable land than Appalachian
State. You know
what?
Never mind. This is a hilarious joke.
Yeah. Got him. Now we're laughing.
See, when you explain the joke.
God, is this guy Dave Chappelle?
You just need to take 2.5 minutes and have the joke explained to you.
All right. Please continue with the Aggie Midnight Yell.
I just hope that these guys can get here tomorrow all right, because I know for a fact that half of their football team can barely even read the name on their jerseys. Let alone read a map.
Wow. They can't read a map?
It's a shame that the only two brain cells that all these guys have left are going to get knocked out by our wrecking crew defense tomorrow.
That didn't happen.
Okay, let's pause. Let's pause. So
let's have a fight Texas Aggie yell practice.
Okay. So.
Hell yeah, brother.
Who, by the way, can read a map today?
Yeah, no, it's all GPS.
I mean, you look at a GPS, there's no point in having a map anymore unless we lost service.
You see, he set up that joke because earlier he said that he had to look at a map to see where Appalachian State was. So they know how to read maps at A&M. So it's a layered burn, much like his hillbilly one.
A question. You have, per the fall of 2021, 56,723 students that go to your school. Do you think you could have found one who is better at being funny than that guy? Serious question, Aggies. Could you find one person in your 60,000 Pearson school that's a little better than this guy? Who chose this guy?
I don't know.
You have to be a yell leader, dude. So now you choose from that 50,000. There's
say,
like 10.
Not every tradition needs to last, okay? Not every tradition needs to last. People used to use the bathwater that other family members used. People also used to have
10
children because there was no birth control. People used to not wear deodorant because there wasn't. Not every tradition needs to last forever. The concept of a pep rally and of people talking crap and students getting up there and roasting, I don't hate. Should those students be in overalls and, to your point, you know, be unfunny? No, it just was awkward to me.
I think
made it's, more awkward by the fact that they lost.
I get it. I mean, the prime yell leader here, not very good. But you know what? It's good that the Aggies have yell leaders as opposed to cheerleaders. You know, ask Dan Orlovsky. Ask who is Mike Pence. You know, it can be distracting to have women near you.
As someone from Indiana, I am triggered.
You can be distracted by, like, just you see a woman, you're like, whoa. I mean, would the Aggies be able to focus on their studies or their football if there were scantily clad cheerleaders that were out there instead of the yell leaders? I don't know. But I do want to know what, Vanessa, the requirements are to become a yell
leader.
That's
a great question.
Like, do you have to be loud? Is that it?
I'm guessing stand-up comedy isn't one of them.
Definitely not.
I think it's
none of the
team
next
spirit,
Dave,
I think,
here.
Is most of it. It's just being peppy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Caring about the Ags the most.
You know, I get that there are traditions. I get that there's apparently alcohol involved where these, you know, people have fun and then go to this thing.
I think he was sober.
He was definitely sober. All right. If you're sober and you want to watch a Cougs game,
hell
listen
yeah.
to Paul.
Well, listen, guys. The Cougs are coming off of a 12-1 season, and I know they just lost to Texas Tech, but we're going to give away a triple option. Hoik, hoik, hoik! Three-game mini plan that includes all three of the Cougs' remaining September games. Because they were on the road to open up the season. They're going to play Kansas, they're going to play Rice, they're going to play Tulane, and winners will receive one pair of tickets for all three games to buy a triple option three-game mini plan. Call 713-GO-COUGS or go to uhcougars.com/tickets. They start the plans at $117 for all three games. You get to pick the games that you want to attend. But caller three, you're going to Kansas, UH versus Rice, and UH versus Tulane to 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You're a Cougs fan. You want to call in. You get tickets, so make it happen.
All right, we can't talk about sports without talking about our lovely Houston Astros, who are destined for another playoff run. But an interesting tidbit coming from last night's game, not only that Fromber threw the first shutout of his career, but more so what Chandler Rome posted on Twitter. General manager James Click is in the final season of his contract, as is manager Dusty Baker. Thoughts?
Interesting to see that be put out right now. And, you know, you wonder if both James Click and Dusty Baker, who don't see eye to eye, will be back after this season. I guess it's entirely dependent on what takes place in the playoffs. If you had to pick who's more likely to return, who do you think it is? Click or Baker? I think it's Click.
I think it could be Click, not only because of the fact that Dusty is older, and I mean, it's not ageism, it's just the reality. But they've really hit it on some of these moves that they've made. And how much of that is Jeff Luhnow? How much of that, you can debate that within yourself. But I do think it would be most likely to be James Click.
If Alex Cora's back with the Boston Red Sox, if Carlos Beltran is associated with the New York Yankees, is it too crazy to ask for Jeff Luhnow to be back in the Astros in some
I don't think it's too
form?
Crazy, but I think that the name Ship you need sailed. To remember is Joe Espada.
Ooh,
you know, their bench coach is somebody manager. That had had a couple interviews last season. He's somebody that the players really like, and he's somebody that everybody in the I've not heard anybody in the organization say a bad thing about Joe Espada. I know they love them some Dusty Baker, but if you're Jim Crane, are you thinking, all right, a team's going to snag him?
I bet you're thinking that. And also, I mean, is Dusty Baker going to make some sort of critical error over the course of these playoffs? And I know that there's been a lot of, at times, overstated complaining about some of Dusty Baker's decision. But sometimes they've been, I think, very rational critiques of the moves that he has made, specifically lineup decisions. And I don't think that there's that much of a margin for error for Dusty here. I mean, you do not want to be the team that made it to five straight American League Championship Series and only has one World Series victory to show for it. Three World Series, you're 1-2 in them. All it's going to take is a couple of decisions. Go back to 2003 in Boston. Grady Little leaves Pedro Martinez in a game where he was pitching dominant. Martinez gives up a bunch of hits. Grady's out of a job, even though the Red Sox were a game away from the World Series. It really doesn't take much if you're a manager to get the axe. And I feel like there's a good chance we will see a couple of moves made by Dusty Baker along the way of the playoffs that have you wondering whether or not he should still be managing in baseball, given his age.
Yeah, definitely something to look for, as well as Joe Espada's status and how he's elevated possibly within the organization. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we finished week one last night with a little Russell Wilson revenge game, question mark? Not so much. We're going to recap that loss. That's coming up next.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Sports. ESPN 97.5.